This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink, inspiring public curiosity about food. Learn more at mofad.org.
This week on Meat and Three, we bring you stories about the coldest, darkest season. We start in a California vineyard.
It's cold, but it's wet, and things are still alive. There's a lot of life in this soil.
We explore two frontiers of cocktail culture, luxury ice and the rise of non-alcoholic drinks.
The rocks traditionally becomes 25% of your drink's volume, and as such, it imparts smells and tastes.
And we investigate the risks facing New York City delivery workers during the harsh winter.
In the wintertime, after 2 hours of biking, it's quite easy, actually, for the bikes to sting upside down or slips or slide.
Tune in to this week's episode of Meat and Three, that's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E, for some food for thought to sustain you through the dead of winter. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome, everybody, to the show Life's a Banquet, the show that's edible, spreadable, and Zara.
Horrible.
Starring your hosts, me, Brendan Scott, and
me, Zara Tangora.
A show about ostriches, wine, and dough.
I'm drunk.
Always. Life's a banquet, life's a banquet, life's a banquet, banquet. Welcome to the show, Life's a Banquet. Yes, the show about the highs and lows of all things edible, spreadable, and Zara.
Pourable.
Copyright tagline, so don't even try, folks. I made that one up when I was, I don't know.
You spent a week there one night?
One time when I was drunk and stoned.
What's new? When was that? Always?
Always. You know.
What's going on, Breton? You nut.
Well, today is one of those blustery, wintry, icy, wintry mix snow. It was actually kind of the first true snowy day of New York City, right?
It's thanks to climate change, it snowed for about 30 to 45 minutes, and now it's raining.
Yep, and it turned into hail, sleet, and dog and pee, piss-colored snow. And
hellfire and brimstone.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, today was an interesting day. Start of the day as usual, you know, 6 a.m., bulletproof coffee and a puff of weed. Coconut oil enema. 2 hours at the gym, yoga practice, etc. And, you know, I just, I came back and I'm on my third series of microdosing with psychedelic mushrooms.
You know how I can tell?
How?
Because you're wearing a full matching flannel suit and you're wearing a pink round sunglasses.
I have a fabulous thing. I'm just going to do a quick mentioning of vintage clothing. My friend Casey Lane, her Instagram is the Umbrella Lady or at Umbrella Lady. It's probably wrong and she's going to be like, bye. Anyway, her name's Casey Lane. She's fabulous. Check her on Instagram. And she gave me this gorgeous vintage hunting red, like checked buffalo checked plaid suit.
You look absolutely stunning. The funny thing is that you do already own a buffalo plaid red flannel suit.
This is why I believe in the power of social media, the power of Instagram, is that she saw us on Instagram, and she said, you need this for free. Actually, I did trade her a black sequin dress. Anyway, to make a long story short, I started my third cycle of microdosing mushrooms today. It took a little bit too much.
I know.
Yeah, a little bit too much. So I had a small little mushroom trip, which turned out to be really, really helpful today because it was kind of gloomy. And, you know,
What'd you do?
I went to the park. I put my slippery shoes on because that's always a good idea. And I went down the hill of the park and went like skiing. I went full on. The snow was like ice. I went skiing. People were watching me. I drew crowds and. Well, the crowds were actually just, there was one person.
There was like someone with a dog.
Yeah. There was someone with a dog that was watching me.
Brett and Scott, what can't you do is what I'd like to know.
So that happened. But you know what? Overall, I would say if you want to, you know, go ahead, email us at lifesabanquetshow@gmail.com. We can tell you all about it.
I can rather. Yeah.
And you can tell me, Zara's being my observer. She's like my therapist. Like, well, I noticed he stutters a lot more and...
Interesting.
And looks stop like paying his bills.
He's shaved half of his hair off, and he has two beards.
Anyways, what's going on? Talk to you about food and beverage. What are you?
A food and bev.
What have you? You know what? Okay, listeners.
Never mind. Don't worry.
Hold on, I want to tell
you. No, I'm done. I'm finished.
Before you finish, I always go to Zara's house. She lives in Brooklyn, so do I. Very quick commute. And I always, the first thing I do, I'm like, Kramer, I go in, I open her house and I open her fridge. And I'm always like, oh, wow, pickled this, pickled that. So I start dipping my fingers in. Like, oh, look at that hunk of cheese. You've got nothing in your fridge the last week.
Nothing. Actually, I typically don't have anything in my house except for pickles. But if you were to come over right now, you would find that I have prepared a bubbling hot pot of avoglimino.
Okay, so tell us about, for those of us that aren't
look it
Greek.
Up. Look it Google up, it. Non-Greeks. What do I care?
Tell me about it.
Avoglimino, one of my very favorite delights growing up in the North Shore of Long Island. We had a lot of Greek diners. And we would have gyros and souvlaki and the whole bit. But my favorite thing was always avoglimino, which is a chicken lemon rice soup. And I got very inspired after last week's soup episode. I went right home. I made myself some stock. I turned that frown upside down. Yeah. And I made avoglimino. So take that, Martha. Jesus.
Put that stock Oprah. Into a crock. You know what? Isn't that great when you can influence when you can inspire yourself?
Exactly. I went home and I go, you know, I love that Zara Tangora. She does have a lot of good recipes. So I made one of my own fabulous recipes. And now I also had a very interesting week.
Mm-hmm.
Did I go human sledding? No, I didn't.
That's okay. Everybody has their own thing.
Hang on one sec. It's that. It's your phone.
Oh, wow. Yeah. My phone. Oh, cool.
Your phone is making a noise.
I love noises.
So I went upstate for a day trip this week to Poughkeepsie. And I went with my friend kind of last minute to this like wild party. It was like a music industry party. And at the last minute, we're on our way home. This is kind of like one of our like Larry David stories. So we're on our way home. The host goes, can you take, you have room for one more? And he points to this girl who is like an 18-year-old girl who is just like at the party. Very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's a 2.5-hour drive.
Yeah,
with traffic.
Yeah, Poughkeepsie.
To take a complete stranger home with you to Midtown Manhattan. And so naturally I was like, I can't do that. But we said yes. And then luckily for our failed transit system, I go, oh, you know what? The L train actually isn't working. Can we just drop you off at the train station? She goes, okay, no problem. So I have my dad's old car. The clock is, I still didn't move the clock back. I was with our dear, dear friend, Michael. He's sitting in the front. We look at the clock. He goes, oh, look, we get to the train station. She's like, you got 2 minutes until the train. That's great. And so she runs out. She goes, okay, bye, guys. This girl's 19, full of hope and optimism. We pull away.
Thing. If only she Michael knew the truth.
I know. Michael looks at his phone and goes, wait, why does my phone say 5 and your clock says 6? I was like, my clock's fast. So this girl had to wait in the freezing cold for over an hour in the middle of nowhere. We left an innocent girl for dead.
Well.
Because I couldn't bear to drive home with a stranger. And that just makes me realize that I'm a certain kind of person that I'm not like most people. Most people are much more friendly and accommodating. Listeners, would you leave a strange woman for dead? Knowing all I know about true crime, I just left her right out there in the middle of nowhere. Anyway, it was a Hawaiian theme
park. Well, you know, people
park.
Are dying every day. You can't control everything. I can't stop the bad meat companies from slaughtering, you know, horrible innocent animals. I can't stop Clinique and from testing on it. I don't know, whatever companies do that. I shouldn't say anything.
Yeah, so now we're on blast from Clinique. Anyway, I'm so sorry. If you're listening out there, girl, who I don't know, I'm sorry I left you for dead. It was a Hawaiian theme party, though, and there was lots of poi and all other kinds of slop, ambrosia salad. I laughed, I cried, I ate a tiny forkful of rice, and that was it.
That's so funny that you said Hawaiian music, because today in this blustery cold weather, I decided to put on my favorite Googled on Spotify, like Hawaiian luau music.
You did?
And I listened to it, and it wasn't really a Hawaiian luau. It was mostly Bob Marley and other kind of like white people.
Oh,
reggae,
yeah.
Like
thanks,
white people.
Thanks, Spotify.
Yeah, exactly. But it was really good, and I boiled a big pot of apple or cinnamon, right? Okay, hold on. Pro tip. You want it to feel more like it's just winter. You just take a giant pot of water and shove oranges and tangerines and cloves and star anise. I always say that. whatever else, warm spices, and you just boil it in your entire house, an apartment building,
yeah.
If you have one.
Smells good.
It smells delicious.
It's a trick. It's just a little twist. You put anything in there. Lavender is really nice. But during the winter months, cinnamon smells good. And it's a really good tip if you cook at home a lot. You know, like recently I just mentioned I made stock. And then after the stock is done, I'm like, oh my God, Marona, my entire house. It smells like a dirty armpit.
Yeah, you know,
you don't want your bedroom to smell like chicken stock.
I made French fries the other day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I got inspired from our French fry episode.
Oh, you did? Yeah. So Brendan and I are now only inspired by ourselves.
Yes.
Inspo. Today's inspo, me. Narcissism, narcissistic culture.
I just wake up every day and I'm shocked about who I am.
So anyway, speaking of me, what else did you cook this week?
Oh, this week. It was a busy week. I'm getting ready for this upcoming holiday.
What is it? So what holiday is it, Brendan?
It's Valentine's Day. And in case you're listening, this is Tuesday, February 12th. And Valentine's Day is this this Thursday.
Heartbreak, V-day. Sex.
Yeah, heartbreaks, sex, deuces, restaurants.
Price fixed menus.
Proofing menus. Like, you can't come in here unless you each spend $129. First people to cry win the prize. So when I used to work at the Waverly Inn, even though I signed an NDA, I don't care. Call my lawyer. Call him Graydon Carter. See if I care. But yeah, we would always joke who would be the first. Like, at what time of the night would the first...
Oh, breakup happen?
Breakup or cry or
oh
fight.
Oh, my God.
It usually only took about a half an hour if the first seating was around 5:30.
Yeah.
You know, so for those of you... Now, Zara and I are both... If you're just tuning in, we're both cooks, restaurant, kind of everything people. We both own restaurants. We've opened and closed them. And here we are, sitting in a fabulous radio studio drinking cognac.
We laughed, we cried, we went bankrupt.
Yeah, exactly. We owe tons of money. It's fabulous. Oh, God, I'll tell you all about it in the book. So anyway, during Valentine's Day, and I can't wait to tell you about Zara's little thing, basically restaurants, we all hate everybody. We all hate that day. It's horrible. And all the tables are slashed into deuces or two tops. And, you know, the six tops are removed. A lot of restaurants rent tables. They're like, bring it in, like, pack them in, right? It's a restaurant's a wonderful opportunity to make a shit ton of money in one night. It can pay your bills for like 2 months.
You can, yeah.
So anyway, we have over the years become embittered, and maybe I think it's a Hallmark holiday.
But it is.
I've been as I get older and out of restaurants, I try to say, well, you know, what's nice about it?
I loved Valentine's Day at Brucey because we would always do something kind of out of the box, and that one year in 2014
and not the chocolate box.
We would always do something out of the Russell Stover box,
and I don't mean that raspberry nougat.
That's the worst one.
Everybody hates the raspberry nougat. You know you do. And if there's one freak that likes the raspberry nougat, please call us and email
us. First of all, nougat, not sure that's how it's pronounced. Second of all,
nougat?
If you're a nougat lover, if you are a raspberry nougat lover, find the other, there should be like some kind of dating app for that. I used to like it because, not nougat. I used to like Valentine's Day because
never.
In 2014 when Beyonce did that, when she dropped her self-titled album, everyone was obsessed. We did Beyonce Valentine's Day at Brucey, and it became...
You were written up at the Times.
A viral sensation. We were in every magazine we had. We were cooking until 4 a.m. And so we also closed... When I closed Brucey, we closed on Valentine's Day. We did a two-day event. One night was... The first night was a wedding, and the second night was a funeral.
Well,
and it was really fun.
So it sounds like you really are in, or Valentine's Day has...
I'm a celebrator. I don't like holidays that carry a lot of like expectation, especially when you're with someone or if you're alone. So Valentine's Day for me, in a romantic sense, is... It's just like a setup for some kind of either like corniness, something embarrassing. I wouldn't want to go out to dinner on Valentine's Day to a place that had a price fix thing. If you're listening, you do that. That's completely fine. It's just not for me. And I'm assuming probably not for you either.
Well, this reminds me of the story though, Zara. When I was single years ago, I was traversing the streets of Manhattan on Valentine's Day. I was like, all I wanted was a good meal. I was
snarling and biting into things.
I don't know. I was like, restaurants.
You were eating a turkey leg.
Ugh. And I go up to Raoul's restaurant. And if Raoul's, if you're listening,
in Soho.
Don't worry. Yeah, yeah. And I sit at the bar thinking, you know what? There's a bar. At least I can probably get an a la carte, you know, steak frites or something.
Sure.
And I sit down. The guy's like, I'm sorry. You have to get the pre-fee for two people. And I'm like, I know, but I'm only one person. I'm a single guy. And they're like, sorry, we don't have any food. I was like, I'll buy something.
What?
I'll spend $30 to buy a single item. They're like,
no,
you got to do the whole thing. I was like, no, but I'm not.
Did you get the pre-fee for two? I would have done it. Got two things. And then be like, excuse me, I'm sorry, my mom's calling. And then you run out of the bill.
I abruptly left, went on the train, met a stranger, went home with them that night. It was fabulous. So
Oh my goodness. Should we get into our topic, Breton?
Yeah, I just, you know... I'm just preparing for this Valentine's Day. I want to make sure that I have lots of chocolate. Chocolate and caramel is my theme this year, as it is probably for many of you. I wanted to talk, you know, what do we, so, okay, listen to this. What do all these things have in common, and both with Valentine's Day and themselves? We've got blood pudding, Polish blood pudding, kuszka, French boudin noir, Chinese pig blood pudding. Well, I guess I'm kind of giving it away. Morcilla, Spanish morcilla. There's the Korean, like, version. And all of these are puddings and sausages made with
blood.
Blood. Pig blood.
Dripping. Deer blood.
Deer blood. Cow blood.
Rabbit blood.
Hard to find chicken blood.
Ant blood.
Yes.
Bee blood. Yeah. Worm blood.
Yes.
And everything has blood, so we could keep going like this for hours. Our topic today, everyone, all you out there, is blood.
Now listen, blood is kind of the, shall we call it the noir, the boudin noir of the cooking world. It evokes death and just murder and cruelty and like blood dripping, and some people will be off putting, or some people are off put about when
they're off putting.
They're off block pudding. Ba-dum-bum. But listen, blood is and always has been in the history of many world cuisines and global cuisines a wonderful source of sustenance. In fact, I think there was a few chefs that had, when I was researching this week, you know, said it's like that whole nose-to-tail cooking, right? To cook to not use all the parts of an animal is actually a disgrace.
It's a complete disgrace.
Now, hold on. I wanted to tell something. For those of you that are squeamish about blood, I'm not here to change your mind or to tell you that you should eat it or shouldn't eat it. Perhaps you're a vegetarian, you're a vegan. If so, push, well, actually just listen to this because it's part of our world. So blood is in every bite of a hamburger. Blood is in the bite.
Snap, you told them. It sure is.
Blood is, you are eating blood in a hamburger. You were eating blood when you cut open that skinless, what is it, a boneless?
Tampon sandwich.
Tampon sandwich. God, I love a tampon sandwich. Your boneless, skinless chicken breast is filled with blood. Your fish heads. Well, sorry.
Your body.
Quick interject. I go to Chinatown yesterday, and I try to get some fish heads because I want to make some fish stock. Uh-huh. And this guy like hacks up this giant salmon and just like whacks it on the head, kills it. It was live. Slices open the head. And then he holds this head open for this woman. And the head that's still breathing. Just the head. It's like, you know, because of rigor mortis is about to set in.
What a thrill.
Oh, my gosh. And she was like, in whatever language she was speaking, Cantonese or Chinese or Fukien or whatever dialect. And she tells the guy to cut the head in half again.
Oh, wow.
Because it was too, it weighed too much, but it was just dripping in blood.
Yeah. Well, and then I bet she made a beautiful, delicious stock with it. So what are some of the things that, what are some of the traditional foods that you've been researching that involve blood?
Okay. Well, my favorite entry into blood is, this happened when I was in Spain. It's the morcilla sausage, M-O-R-C-I-L-L-A. It's a very dark sausage that can either be made, well, it has pig's blood in it, and it is either filled with kind of some type of cereal grain, in this case, rice or onion. Sometimes people use apples. It almost has a sweet taste for a sausage. And what they'll do is they'll steam or cook these sausages, much like a boudin noir. And a boudin noir is the French version of that, which usually has heavy cream in, so it's a little bit of it's a softer color.
Right.
Rather than it's a very dark, dark. Anyway, this morcilla sausage, you slice it, and then you can just saute it. And that's all you need. It is so flavorful.
It's
so delicious. And it's just little niblets. You can put a little toothpick in it and put on top of your bread with some little, you know, little smoked paprika. And voila. Like, when I was
delicious.
In Ireland, this Polish, I stayed with this Airbnb, and this Polish, it was actually a Mr. B&B.
What's that, a gay Airbnb?
It's gay Airbnb. It's like only gay guys. Sorry.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, that way in case.
I need to travel with you and Preston more.
Well, you know, it's pretty fun. Gays have their own culture across the world. Steam rooms, saunas, all that stuff. Anyway.
Well, good for you.
Anyway, we didn't have a steam room sausage, but he did make us Polish blood pudding. And
oh,
I thought,
God,
what a fun thing to have. And it is very, you know, Scottish, all the UK and all the Brits. And
how does that differ than from morcilla?
I believe that the like black pudding, like Scottish black pudding, that just doesn't have the rice, but they'll use apples and sometimes
or like oats, correct?
Yeah, they'll use it exactly. They'll use whatever like groats and oats and whatever cereal grain that is probably particular to that country.
Right, Stephen, who we were just chatting about with Doug, from Buttermilk Channel, who now works over at Buttermilk. Stephen used to be my sous chef at Brucey, And he used to every Valentine's Day make blood pudding and blood sausage for Valentine's Day in some respect. And he would always use, I believe, oatmeal, and it was delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you say that your grandfather, Louis Spotalski?
Yeah, good, excellent.
Excellent memory. I minored in Polish. Yeah. That he,
I thought so.
He had a duck's blood soup recipe that was yummy.
Oh, you know what's so funny? I completely forgot to
make sweet and sour.
It's duck blood soup, and it is made with pig blood and duck blood, and it's thickened. And I don't, you know, it's just very. You don't taste blood.
I know. I think that it's something that, you know, people in our culture are not going to quite come around to it maybe this minute. But anybody out there getting interested in thinking about having some blood, get to your nearest British gastropub, or maybe just, I mean, the city is full of places.
Yeah, and if you are a meat eater, just remember that blood is filled with, hey, listen, if you're keto or doing this like kind of low carb thing,
get a gallon of blood.
Blood is filled with plasma. And guess what plasma has? Albumin. And guess what albumin is? It's the same thing that egg white protein has. So it's filled with protein, low in carbohydrates. It has tons of lecithin, which can, you know, reduce the low density cholesterol, which is the bad cholesterol. So all these health benefits, and it's nourishing.
No, it is nourishing.
Nourishing.
It's as nourishing as nougat. Should we take a quick break and then get into our story for the day?
Love a good break.
Let's take a little blood break, everybody. Go get yourselves a pint of blood, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Blood break, blood break.
This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink. Featuring a variety of interactive displays, MOFAD encourages eaters of all ages to be curious about food. The museum currently operates MOFAD Lab, a 5,000-square-foot experimental space in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, where Chow, making the Chinese-American restaurant, is currently on show until the end of March 2019. This exhibition celebrates the birth and evolution of Chinese-American restaurants, tracing their nearly 170-year history and sparking conversations about food culture, immigration, and what it means to be American. It highlights the evolution timeline of Chinese-American restaurant menus, dating back to 1910, and also highlights a tasting section where participants get to enjoy tastings created by the country's most talented chefs who specialize in Chinese-American cuisine. Make sure you check out Chow while you still can. The exhibition closes at the end of March 2019. Check out MOFAD's tastings and extensive event calendar at mofad.org/events.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. Hi, my name is Sam Benrubi, and I'm the host of The Grape Nation on Heritage Radio Network. With this show, we bring wine to the people. Each week, we bring the best guests in wine on, taste different wines on air, and invite our listeners to taste with us. You'll find our approach to wine decidedly unsnobby. You can find The Grape Nation wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Micro dosing.
Oh God, I'm drinking this overproof rum. I bought a bottle of overproof rum and it's 149 proof.
All
it's from
right.
Plantation. And I will say a little, best thing to have a flask.
Little dabble to you. All right, Brendan.
We have like four or five rums on that shelf right there, and every single one of them is overproof to the point where I wonder, do they make normal proof rum anymore? I don't know.
That's a good question, Matt. Let's do our next episode on
rum. I say more bang for your buck.
Absolutely.
Right?
I just drink pure grain alcohol.
All right. Well,
listen. Get right to it.
We are back talking about Valentine's Day and blood. Zara.
Exactly. So, you know, Valentine's Day isn't happy for everybody. That's why we're talking about blood, because blood is sexy, blood is angry, blood is red, and blood is passionate. And so today I wanted to make my story. I was looking around and I'm like, should I do the history of blood sausage? That was where my mind originally went. Then I go, no, Zara, you push yourself a little further. Find that little caveat that no one's
that
really
little
thought of. So my story today, and I want to mention I got a lot of my information because I really did get a lot of it from Munchies and Slate. And
isn't that fabulous? You can get younger people that make less money, do tons of research. And
well, you know, they have the thing with the millennials with blood transfusions. You get blood transfusions from a young millennial. So that's
email lifesepicwhatshow@gmail.com. 42-year-olds are looking for your young blood.
I'm only 35, but I still will take that blood. I'll still take that blood. All right, listen, Breton, when I say these names, Hitchcock, Scorsese, Kubrick, Raimi, Tarantino, De Palma, Carpenter, Von Trier, what do you think?
I think of torturous...
misogyny?
I think of... exactly.
Rape culture. Okay.
I think of rape culture. I think of murders. I think of people...
Jerking off
treated,
the mirror.
People getting treated unfairly.
Well, do you also think of fake blood? Because these are some directors that have notoriously used a lot of fake blood in their films. And so my story today is going to be a brief history of fake blood in films. And why I'm talking about this is because most often, more often than not, almost I'd say 90% of the time, the fake blood is made out of things that are edible.
Yeah. Now, most often does mean more often than not. That's
most
good to
often
know.
Means more than no.
Yeah.
More yes, more Y than N. So the earliest blood was like symbolic in theater, and they would just use like a red handkerchief, and so someone would die, and then mort, mort,
mort, and they would throw out the right.
Yes, exactly. And then horror plays started using red pigment that was derived from boiling dried insects, including the cochineal bug, which was also used until recently in
Campari, and ruby red grapefruit.
Yes, and so I actually think that Campari, when I was thinking about this, I'm like, Campari wouldn't be a bad... If we were doing a low-budge blood thing, I feel like Campari would be a kind of good thing.
Reduce some Campari down.
But the problem was when it cooled, it like made scabby-looking things. And then from there, in black and white films,
classic.
For forever, they used chocolate syrup. Because either Bosco or Hershey's.
I do recall this,
because chocolate syrup looked exactly like blood on black and white film. Even in Psycho... They used syrup, and when Psycho was made, it was a revelation because the plastic squirt bottle in the late 50s had just come out, and so they could use the squirt bottle to make it
look. Isn't that weird? That
was the technique.
What did they do before? What did chefs do before squirt bottles? What would they put their little dabs of like avocado puree with?
I don't know, some kind of glass. That's a good question.
Like, they use a spoon.
Email lifesbanquetshow@gmail.com for all the answers, please. Thank you. They were trying to figure out how to make a blood-centric movie with Psycho. It was still in black and white, so they lucked out. But as the 1950s drew to a close and the 60s came around, the swinging 60s came about.
That's right.
It was a challenge to figure out how exactly they were going to make blood, you know, red and true to life. So enter... corn syrup.
Corn syrup.
Caro corn syrup made its debut, and they started using it. It was called Kensington Gore. And Kensington Gore was a type of fake blood. Kensington Gore. Kensington Gore is
Mr.
made...
Mr. Hitchcock, did you order the...
Who ordered
the Kensington Gore?
2,500 gallons of gore.
So anyway, this guy, John Tyngate, invents Kensington Gore. It becomes heavily relied on in The Shining. Stanley Kubrick, in 1980, we're fast-forwarding a little while, Stanley Kubrick uses about 300 gallons of Kensington Gore in the scene where the blood flows out of the... elevator.
Oh my gosh. Can I really interject?
Yes,
the
please.
Metropolitan Opera a couple years ago, and I don't remember which performance, they had a tank full of blood that had to be filtered, made, drained into a truck, and then filtered at a special location in Queens to be reused for several performances throughout the week, because the actors obviously had to have clean blood.
Right. Oh my God, that's so crazy.
They would go inside of it, and it had to be...
Ooh, yeah.
Metropolitan.
Kensington Gore was made 2 cups of golden corn syrup, 1 cup tepid water, sometimes used for blooming gelatin, 10 teaspoons of red food coloring, a few drops of blue food coloring, a few drops of yellow food coloring,
give it that little purple,
and corn flour, which is interestingly also made by the same company that makes corn syrup, because corn syrup is taken from corn starch.
Yeah, corn flour is corn starch,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yes. So, most famous recipe for fake blood, however, comes from a gentleman named Dick Smith, who was a Hollywood makeup artist.
Classic Americana, right?
Classic Dick Smith. But Dick Smith was a makeup artist. He was really, really famous.
Dick Smith.
And Dick Smith, holler, he's dead. Call me. He died in 2014 of much fake blood poisoning.
Too much corn syrup.
So he did the fake blood for films Exorcist, Taxi Driver, The Godfather. People called him the greatest makeup artist ever to live.
More than Ben Nye?
You mean Bill Nye?
Ben Nye.
The science guy?
No, Ben Nye. The makeup guy. Ben Nye makeup people. It's like the famous, right, theater makeup.
Anyway. Oh, I don't know that. I don't know it. You know, I don't have that much experience with theater makeup. Come on, this is a food podcast. Why are we talking about movies?
I don't know. Why are we talking about fake blood?
Go. I don't know. Okay, so the corn syrup was the base for this fake blood that Dick Smith came up with. However, it was also extremely poisonous because it had photo flow in it. Made the red stuff flow just right, but it was really, really, really poisonous. So, you know, people couldn't use it for fake blood that needed to come out of someone's mouth. For that, there was a solution that was made of, it was called peanut butter blood. And so peanut butter blood was...
sounds very Vietnamese.
Peanut butter blood was used by Sam Raimi and the Evil Dead movies. So Bruce Campbell, the guy who's in all of the Sam Raimi, like Evil Dead, he talks about peanut butter blood and how that was like a thing that they always used. Pretty disgusting, yet very, very interesting. And then let's see. Every director had their own kind of thing that they wanted to use and wouldn't use. Quentin Tarantino, for instance, will only use something called samurai blood. Martin McDonagh, the guy who did In Bruges and Three Billboards, he used 9 different kinds of blood when he was doing this play. It's kind of insane.
9? I'm sorry. That's a whacked director. Like, oh, no, this blood
I
for this scene.
9 different kinds of blood.
Yeah, I could just picture it already.
Really crazy.
Where are they now?
I lost a page that I was reading from, blood. So anyway, Taxi Driver. In the end of Taxi Driver, Martin Scorsese almost didn't get to have an R rating. It was going to be NC-17 because of the color of the blood that he had in the end of the film. So I just watched this again today. When you watch the end of Taxi Driver, that really violent scene when he goes into the brothel to shave Jodie Foster, it's like this weird orangey color, which he ended up saying he thought was even more disturbing. So they had to alter the color that they would add to the corn syrup. That was also a corn syrup based blood, which is gross. So when they would do bullets, when people want to see bullet wounds come out, you see meat flying, that's actually raw meat. So they mix the raw meat with corn syrup and sometimes chocolate sauce. And then that's what makes it look like actual shooting comes, like pieces of human flesh coming out.
Well, listen, if there's any actors out there listening, and if you've eaten blood or maybe had a piece of raw meat with some of that delicious nine type of fake blood, let us know what that tasted like.
And that brings us to our final and most bloody movie of all time, which I rewatched yesterday just for this episode, which is one of my favorite movies of all time, Carrie. Stephen King's Carrie, directed by Brian De Palma, which in the end of the film, Sissy Spacek has a gallon of what's meant to be pig's blood dumped on her head.
That's right. In the book, it is pig's blood.
It's really corn syrup again. And so in the film, after she gets the blood dumped on her, all these fires start going in the background. And Sissy Spacek said at first it felt like a warm bath. And then all of a sudden, when the fire started going, she started roasting like a candy apple because of all the corn syrup that was in it. So she was essentially bruleeing.
Could you imagine? Thank God it wasn't the Michael Jackson Pepsi commercial episode where she would have lost her entire head of hair.
Oh my God, that's a terrible story.
Well, let's not get into that.
And so that's kind of a brief history of movie blood, but I think it's interesting they always had to use food. Even before there was necessary for having it, being ingested, people just decided to use food because it looked more realistic. So food and movie blood have a long history together. Now people are relying a lot on CGI, like David Fincher uses CGI for most of his films. I don't think it looks as good. I think, the corn syrup thing is usually the best looking. And I thought it was interesting they used peanut butter.
It makes me think of, obviously, in Broadway and stage, obviously there's still a need for real fake blood.
Yeah.
I helped a gentleman caller a few years. Remember Chris?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Some guy. We'll change
it. Gentleman
car. Sorry. We'll edit that out and
Should
say.
Should we call him?
We'll call him.
Riss.
Riss.
Yes.
Riss, yes. Anyway, but I did help him make some blood at one point, which we did use, of course, Hershey syrup and corn syrup and red dye.
Yeah, yeah.
They squirted it all over, and it looked very realistic. I had to test it.
The peanut butter I thought was crazy. And then, so the Carrie thing tied me to my next point that I want to make kind of about Valentine's Day in general. Mm. So Carrie was obviously about a girl who was an outcast and misunderstood and didn't feel like part of the crew. And I think a lot of people can kind of feel like that.
It was her mom's fault.
Well, her mom, of course, her mom was a psycho.
Yeah, her mom was a sociopath.
We can have really nice moms and dads, and we can still feel like outcasts a lot of the time. And
that's
I think
true.
Valentine's Day is one of those days that really brings it up for people, whether you have a partner and you're feeling perhaps inept in knowing the right thing to prepare or plan, or you don't have enough money to do something crazy, or you're alone, which can be, it's one of those alienating times. So in the vein of Carrie, Brendan and I want to give you a chef recommends this week. That centers around how to celebrate Valentine's Day if you are either feeling lonely, like an outcast, like maybe you don't know how to cook the right thing. So what are some of your recommendations for having an alt Valentine's Day, whatever that may be, forgetting it, doing it differently?
All right. So listen, we're going to have here our powwow. We're going to give you all the options, right?
Yes.
You're single. You just broke up. You're dating somebody new. You're not dating somebody. You're dating yourself. You hate yourself. You love your cat. You don't like your dog. You got a dog. You don't like your cat. You have a bunny. You have a parakeet. No. Okay. So let's start with things that are beautiful and sort of, I don't know, evoke like classic Valentine's Day, right?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, let me tell you something about if you're cooking dinner. And since this is sort of like we're aiming at people that are cooking and stuff, first of all, skip the restaurants. If you haven't made a reservation already, don't call the restaurant today and be like, hey, do you guys have anything for 8 p.m. on Thursday?
Yeah.
And like pretend like it's not Valentine's Day. Like, oh, Thursday at 8, you know,
yeah.
It's a regular day. As if the reservationist doesn't know that,
right.
Like, it's blocked. Every restaurant has this. It's like highlighted in red. Like there's like a red phone that answers when they call for Valentine's
Day. Emergency line.
Yeah, like anybody that calls starting Monday for Thursday, just say, we're fully committed.
So no. Don't call. What should
okay,
we do
so
instead?
Okay, so listen. You can also go to, if let's say, hey, listen, I'm sorry, but I'm a lawyer and I work all day, or whatever, I work on a movie set, whatever you do. You're just a busy person mm-hmm. and you're like, I really do want to go to a restaurant. I would recommend sitting at the bar.
Oh, that's a good
right?
idea.
Mm-hmm. Or going to somewhere maybe a little less that's considered less romantic. I think
Definitely.
I would go to somewhere in Chinatown if you happen to live in Manhattan or Brooklyn or New York or nearby. You know, going to like and just making it cute.
So keeping it low pressure and doing something a little bit different and not thinking so much about having to do the most fancy thing ever.
Exactly, because this is where you're going to channel your Carrie Bradshaw moment.
Totally.
In Sex and the City, where she meets some stranger and it's like, and they ended up like, you know, going in the backyard and there was a wonderful person selling tamales, yeah. You know, and they had the most romantic thing.
Right.
So let's start with that.
Take the pressure off.
Cooking wise. And this will be my thing and then you can tell yours. But
yeah.
I would say my favorite thing to cook for somebody, and even if you're just having some friends over to celebrate that you love your friends, because that's pretty valid too, right? I love getting a big ribeye.
Ooh,
something to share.
A shareable thing,
right? So, exactly.
Something you can get, like, really nasty with.
Yeah,
like,
something that you can,
bone.
Also something you don't have to think about, something that you're not going to, like, be slaving all over. And I'll tell you this, is my favorite time of year. I'm from the 1980s and 90s. I'm sure you are, too.
I'm
sure everybody is at some point. But, like, get out that molten chocolate lava cake recipe.
Very 90s.
As long as you use your timer...
Uh-huh.
Your timer and your oven thermometer to make sure that you're not overcooking it or undercooking it just right, then it will turn out. It's
yes.
the easiest thing to make.
And decorate it with some unseasonal raspberries
raspberries.
A little bit of powdered sugar.
Just get out that damn whipped cream and slather your friends with it.
No, that's a good recommendation.
Yeah.
Mine is very short.
Mm,
My
yes.
recommendation is if you are feeling bad this Valentine's Day, if you don't feel happy, if you're bumming, if you're whatever, break up or just whatever, there's lots of people that feel that way. Put your phone on airplane mode, play some music, maybe get a pack of cigarettes if you're a smoker. If you're not, leave that behind. Not endorsing smoking, just saying.
Call your friend Brett and ask him where he gets the psilocybin mushrooms
just
from.
Just dig into your vice a little bit, if it's not a terrible vice, but a little bit. Do something that maybe feels like you shouldn't do it, but just have fun. Get yourself a bottle of wine, drink it, and turn your phone off. Don't look at Instagram. Don't look what other people are doing.
You know what? That's a really, really good thing you said that, Zara.
Just like don't, the no comparison don't thing. Do it to yourself. It's okay. Eat something or eat nothing.
You know what? FaceTime us. Email
us. Yeah. Hang out with us.
I'll be virtually.
Not actually. Yeah. Please, we do not want to see you in real life. Okay, Breton, what are your top... Now, switching gears onto things that are actually
romantic. I love
romantic,
a good gear switch.
What are your top three foods that make you feel like... that conjure feelings of love?
Okay. Well, besides the obvious, which is chocolate, for me, feelings of love... Okay, if I'm going to really impress somebody... I know I just said steak, but if I... Now it's like we're getting to the real Brett. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, Brett, like...
Peeling away the
like,
layers.
Yeah, like, oh, he left out that little thing. Like, what does he really do? What I really do is I make a roast chicken. I make a roast chicken with oven-roasted potatoes.
Delicious.
And that's kind of it.
There's no number two or three?
What do you mean? Oh, I'm
our top three.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Darn it.
We do it every week.
Well, turns out...
Hello.
Turns out memory loss is a side effect. Well, but who cares? I feel fabulous.
My second thing is psilocybin mushrooms.
Yeah, my second and third and fourth and tenth thing is mushrooms. I actually do love cider mushrooms. But anyway, besides that, my second thing is like a red pasta, spaghetti and meatballs. Mm. I mean, come on. Who does not want to have the...
Connecting over the spaghetti strand.
Who doesn't want to have that moment? I was about to say the Beauty and the Beast.
I just started thinking of Requiem for a Dream when they were doing ass to ass.
Oh, who doesn't
want to
have... You know what? Go ahead. Listen, let's not forget about double dildos.
Yes,
and
please.
Because that is the number one... You know what? Straight couple, gay couple...
Anyone can
lesbians
do it.
Lesbians love a gay... You know what? What a wonderful thing if you're a straight man to just... Tell your girlfriend or guy friend or, you know, that you guys, you're going to be submissive that night.
Exactly.
You're going to be vulnerable because it's all about
being
vulnerable.
That's what the spaghetti reminds me of for some reason. Okay, what's your number? What's your number three?
That's not, the funny thing is when that scene happens, she's at her like worst heroin.
Right.
Anyway.
Yes.
And of course, my final, and I'll say, I guess, can I say lasagna, even though I said spaghetti and meatballs?
Lasagna.
Can I say lasagna?
You could say lasagna or lasagna.
My third and final thing is getting completely naked and just, again, channeling that Sex and the City moment and putting sushi all over your naked body and having your partner. That's uni.
You're so hairy, though.
Uni, well, whatever. Uni and tamago.
Good God. Okay.
Yeah, so that's my number three, everybody. Zara, what about you?
I don't know. At this point now, all I can think of is your naked body and dildo ass to ass. Okay, my number three food that makes me think of love, I guess Coco Van for obvious reasons.
Good one.
My second one would be...
Do you like a black Coco Van, like with the silky chickens?
Oh, yeah. Any kind of Coco Van, really.
Okay. Anyway,
as long as it's big.
Perfect.
Not thin.
Nothing like a thin sauce.
Who likes a thin Coco Van? Am I right, ladies and men?
There we go. Number two.
And other number two would be a nectarine, perfectly ripe.
Oh.
Or a peach, a la Call Me By Your Name.
Okay, now perfect. For those of you living in the Southern Hemisphere where you have stone fruits at your disposal.
Exactly.
Disposable stone fruits.
Find yourself a nectarine date this Valentine's Day is what I'm trying to say. And my number one, for reasons I don't want to disclose, is macaroni salad with extra mayo. Anyway,
it's
this has
the
been
noise.
The Valentine's Day episode of Life's a Banquet. We laughed, we cried, we got drunk and ate psilocybin mushrooms.
That's right. Now listen, do yourself a favor and go out to your butcher and see if you can find yourself some wonderful boudin noir or some black pudding or some...
Or just blood.
Some of that morcilla sauce or some blood. And go ahead and experiment this week and try to make some blood pudding. It's actually very simple.
It is. Also, if you want a sexy thing you can do with your partner this Valentine's Day is get in the bath and pour a gallon of pig's blood on yourselves and just slash around in it.
Just make sure to call that Metropolitan Opera Company to make sure it's filtered the next day.
Well, Breton, this has been a bloody good episode.
Well, you know, that reminds me. That doesn't remind me of anything, actually. I love blood.
Oh, blood, huh? Oh, isn't it delicious? Right. Guys, cook it first.
That's right.
Drinking raw blood makes you a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, guys, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode. We love you.
We love you, too. Thank you very much. And we will see you at the same time next week where Life's a Banquet, because really most... poor suckers are starving, are sucking blood to death.
Life's Banquet and most poor suckers are sucking blood to death. Exactly. Hasta la pasta. Brett and I love you.
Love you too, Valentine's Day.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.